Hey guys.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, everyone. Let's give it a few minutes.
So I'm supposed to scribe today, and I can, but I'm probably going to be presenting a lot today. So if someone's willing to swap with me, like whoever's doing next, I would appreciate it.
Oh, did I miss the scribe order? It's like I did. Yeah, I know Yep, you're right. You are right.
Yeah, Julian did it on Monday.
Is Kevin on the call? Let's see.
Yes.
Hey, Kevin, do you mind scribing?
Sure, I can do that.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Kevin. I started with the attendance, but I'll leave the rest.
All right, I think we have enough people as the participant list. Thank you for joining. Today we want to talk about the results from the licensing subgroup. This subgroup was kicked off after a module evaluation, and there been some discrepancy in how how we treat licenses in Folio. So I believe Maccabee will be taking us through. So Maccabee, go ahead when you can, and let me know if you want to share a screen or something.
Yeah, appreciate it. Let me just start off with a little more context. As Alameda said, this was driven by some of the recent problems as we were evaluating that new module evaluation criteria about third-party dependency licensing. And so the subgroup spun off to both clarify some of the goals and like purposes of what we're trying to be careful of with licensing, as well as to define the process of doing that evaluation more repeatably, both so it's more consistent, less questions as we do it, and just easier to do for all TC members and dev teams as well to do. So we presented a couple of times on Monday meetings of the interim, where we were. Some of the things we've talked about before are spinning off a list of questions to the project's sort of legal counsel via community counsel about some of the trickier aspects of this. I've also talked before about our efforts to look at tools that we could use to do some of this. We talked previously about SendGrip, and we had done an evaluation of that. But for the reasons we've discussed before, including sort of ease of use and some of the modules that that doesn't cover for us, we went in a different direction, and Alameda thankfully rolled a tool to help us with the evaluation side. So that's the summary. The agenda today is first for Alameda just to do a little show and tell of that tool. And then, as you can see, we'll talk through how we intended to manage the lists of licenses within that tool, and then how we are recommending that the tool start to be used throughout the project. So, first step, Alameda, if you're willing, would you do a little show and tell of using the tool?
The tool is at this repo location. The idea is that we need to have more consistency with module evaluations, and there are some criteria that is not reasonable to do by hand, and that's why we should have some tooling in place. Looking ahead as well, we have existing module evaluations, and of course the new module evaluations. And the idea here is that we are able to automate most of the evaluations, and then whatever is left for review for by the evaluator would be left there, or to provide a bunch more information for the evaluator to see. Still ideal future state is that there is a Jenkins job or something that can run this tool across our modules, both UI and the backend modules, and creates awareness of where things are lacking. We have a problem today that once a module has passed the evaluation, some criteria might fail 3 months, 1 year, 5 years after the evaluation is done. So this would try to keep us honest going forward. So this is just for awareness. It wouldn't block anything. So a module evaluator would get a module to evaluate. They would run this tool and get some information that will make it a easier process for all. Like I said, here's the repo. Generally, in the GitHub Actions is where you would run the tool. There's a folio module evaluation here, and you can then run it against a URL for the module you want to evaluate, and then a branch name if it's not the default branch that exists. It's able to output HTML report and JSON. The JSON is there so that you can imagine we have over 150 modules. This tool runs across all of them. It generates each generates a JSON, and we're able to combine that into maybe a larger report for something to see. Within the internals of this tool is the JSON that helps create the HTML report. So runtime is about 2 minutes or so. If you rerun some of the jobs, dependencies that are already cached make it run a lot faster. But that's how long it runs today. So here is how the report would look like. This is a report for Mars source record storage. The repository, when it was evaluated, the language, how many of the criteria it thinks it's passed or needs is failed or needs manual review or not applicable. And here are the evaluation results. So the idea is every criterion in our eval document has a corresponding logic here to either help gather information for the evaluation or be able to assert certain things for the evaluation. As you know, we have lots of criteria, so a lot of it is not implemented yet, but for the sake of the licensing subgroup, the license specific criteria has been put in place. So it will allow, anyone, whether technical or non-technical, whether you have knowledge about JavaScript dependencies or, Java dependencies, to be able to get the information we need to perform the evaluation. So there are a few criteria. Manual means that, human review needs to happen there. Pass is, what it sounds like. And non-applicable just means it has not been developed yet. So specifically for licensing. So here are the transitive dependencies for Mod source record storage. So here are all the dependencies that has been found, and then there's this part here that says that there is AspectJ, which uses a license called Eclipse Public License, which is not discoverable by the tool, and I'll go into that in a little bit. Or the LGPL, which requires documentation in the README. This is a special exception. So we have three libraries that have this special exception as well, and that once you have any of those exceptions, it needs to be documented in the README. So what this is saying is it's not in the README or anything like it. And this is the full list of all of the dependencies that are embedded within, and the licensing that is present. Most of everything else is grayed out because it's not implemented yet. This is for a UI module, so useful information up top. Product council, there isn't any automation that can happen for that, so that's there. And here is the list of all of the dependencies for this module here. And so it says here needs manual review because there is a nub 000 with MIT star. Most likely it should just be MIT, but because it's a star, it's unknown by the tool. So the tool saying, hey, you need to check this out. TSLib, two versions of it. The license is 0 BSD, probably meant BSD. So again, requires manual review. So an evaluator will see this, and maybe they're trying to say MIT, maybe they're trying to say BSD, or we need to have some more communication with the owners of the library to determine what actual license they have and be able to move forward with that. Going back to the code, there is a config file. There's a JSON file that lists all the licenses that we want to track. So when you see unknown in the report, it's because it's not documented here. And this list is according to the ASF policy that we use for our licenses today. So items can be added or removed as the licensing landscape shifts. This is for listing the special exceptions that we want: CQL Java, Mark4j, and Hibernate. Hibernate, some version of Hibernate uses Apache 2 more recently, so maybe that can be taken out at some point. And then there are some times where the same license is represented different ways. So this is an attempt to capture all of that. But ultimately, something that is not discoverable will be listed for manual review down here, and an evaluator would take action on that. So that's the extent of the demo. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Seriously, Wayne. Exactly. I think it's pretty awesome. This fills in a lot of a lot of gaps in what we're able to do, both the ease of it, the ease of doing those evaluations and getting those reports. It covers both front end and back end modules. It doesn't yet cover goal modules, but we'll get there. You know, the breadth of modules, it's configurable in ways that are useful to us, such as being able to cover both, you know, transitive dependencies optionally, yes or no, depending on what we decide we need to do in certain contexts. And it's so easy to run just from GitHub Actions and generating those reports that it's kind of marvelous. So thank you, Alameda, for building that. One of the things Alameda demoed was the references to the categories of license that Apache lists on the ASF website. There's three major categories: category A, which are licenses that they're fine with; category X, which are licenses that they're definitely not fine with; and then category B, which are licenses that they're okay with depending on certain conditions. And the bulk of the category B are licenses that are weak copyleft equivalent licenses that are okay as long as we document them. And as the Folio project has decided earlier, they should be documented in the README. And so the tool spits out, you know, the specific handling for each of those types of licenses. Because we have those three the categories, and we're sort of cloning those lists, we have to have a process for how to just keep those up to date. So do you mind stopping the screen share, and I'll screen share for a sec? Let's see. There we go. So we have a draft here of a process basically for keeping those three lists up to date. And what it basically comes down to is once per release cycle, we will look at the Git history of that particular ASF list to see if anything changed. And if anything was added to any of their lists or removed or recategorized, then we can make a pull request on this repo to update those three files and you know, update this date to say that we did that review, and then TC can just review the changes and you know, approve them as necessary. So we would do that both once per file release, as well as if we have a reason to do it ad hoc, if we do a module evaluation and there's some license that's used in the evaluation that we didn't know about before, we can always do the process ad hoc. It's great that the ASF website uses Git to manage their content, so it's really easy to just look at the history and see both what they changed, you know, and any notes from their legal review on why. So this document is merged into the repo that Alameda was showing off a couple minutes ago, but we can certainly tweak that process as needed. So let me stop there for a second. Any questions or comments on the idea of how we would keep those lists up to date? Okay.
Where would the last review date be stored?
Sorry, just trying to do a screen share. Right up here. PR number one included ASF pages commits prior to that. So we would just update this page as we do the review.
Got it. Thank you.
Yep. Other questions, comments, throwing fruit, et cetera? All right. Then moving on to the next PR. So the question is, introducing this tool, how do we introduce it to the project? So the first thing that we're going to recommend for action, now is tweaking the criteria to basically add a one-liner here that makes that just notes that it's available. Note that that tool is optionally available to evaluate the criteria for Java modules built with Maven and for front-end modules. TC expects to require its use after a trial period. And we can discuss what that trial period is in the next PR. But the idea is we would initially introduce it in a sort of it's available for trying out and seeing what results you get, context. And then there's another PR here, which I'm presenting for review, but not suggesting that we actually approve or merge it. The idea would be roughly 6 months from now, or we can talk about that date. We would merge this one. And what that would do is actually change this criteria to simply say that inclusion of the dependencies complies with the SF policy as defined and reported by that tool. Essentially, just indenting a little bit of the rest of that there. So that's the proposal on both, the short term, how we would introduce it, and then longer term, making it required after whatever trial period we see fit. I saw a couple of things in the chat there. Craig, do you want to? I can't look at the chat while I'm presenting. Do you want to talk
It's
through
not
any changes?
urgent. That's why I put it in the chat. So
Oh, okay.
it's yeah, if you're interested, check it out later. That's all.
Okay, sounds good. So any comments or questions on the idea of these two PRs, either the initial sort of introducing it as a tool or the later requiring it? Okay. Are people not having any questions or comments to any of this because of thumbs up, this all looks reasonable, or because this is all complicated and confusing and doesn't make any sense? Wayne.
I was just going to say you're very well prepared. I really have no comments because it very much makes sense to me. 6 months seems like a reasonable trial period. I mean, it just seems like you've got everything lined up. So, yeah, my silence is not disapproval or confusion.
Sure. No, I appreciate it. I mean, we have a tradition of lazy consensus, but this is enough info dump here that I appreciate the speaking up. And I saw Jen thumbs up. Thank you. All right. Then I guess the next thing to look at is there's another PR here that I shared, which is a little bit of a Q&A, and this would be linked from the criteria itself as like a Q&A about how this would be evaluated. So I did share this before. I know Peter was going to join us today if he could. I think he apparently couldn't make it. But essentially this is trying to figure out how we deal with some of the complications that come up, given the concerns that we've had at TC and also the concerns that Community Council raised even more strongly when Kevin and Peter and I were discussing it with them at WolfCon. In other words, how do we reduce the risks to the project, at least on an interim basis, while we're waiting to get formal legal advice from the folks that CC are gonna put us in touch with? So I did share this earlier. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just to summarize, if there's a license that doesn't appear on that page, then the tool will report that that module is not compliant with the folio policy, and then the evaluator should fail that particular criterion. and making a note that we're trying to keep that up to date. If there's a new module that includes a problem dependency that's already in other existing modules, that becomes a trickier bit of context, but we still want to, we don't want to extend the problem and keep including problem dependencies in more and more modules. So this, the summary of this is basically we ask the dev team to see if they can find some alternatives. And if not, they can sort of argue it out with CC on the balance of the risks and the necessary, the risks and the rewards, I guess. But understanding that we're not going to do that unless we have CC's agreement. We're not going to pass that criterion on continuing to propagate a problem. And then the final one is something that Peter wrote up for us, just explaining why we're referencing Apache in the first place and the basis for this whole need. And yeah, I'm not gonna read that either, but just the context for this whole thing. Questions or comments about anything on the FAQ page?
When did you say this would be merged?
This one we could merge pretty much any time. What I would, I think, in this first PR that just alerts people to the tool, I don't think I was linking to that document. I think in the second one, the follow-up one, no, I guess, yeah, in the follow-up one, no, I'm not linking to it here either. That's an oversight on my part. I think the idea was we would somehow link to that FAQ page from the criteria in both of these two PRs. So I suppose we would be merging. I suppose the request for today, if we have approval or lazy consensus or whatever, would be to approve two of these PRs. First, this one, number 109, which just announces the tool, and I would reference the FAQ page somewhere in here, as well as actually merging in the FAQ page. So I see some thumbs up. So yeah, I guess Alameda, should we just ask that lazy consensus right now? Or maybe I guess we can do it one at a time. Do we have lazy consensus to merge this Q&A page?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yep. Any objections to merging that one? Going once, going twice. All right. And then lazy consensus. Again, I will add a note here to just linking to that Q&A page. If folks want to review that first, that's fine. But lazy consensus, if I added that link to merge in this. All right. Sounds like we have that as well. The other thing I wanted to mention is we added some stuff to the recurring calendar here. Yes, Kevin, indeed. Thank you for that. Three things that we've added as the subgroup here. The first is Kevin. Big thanks to Kevin for writing up the list of questions that we had about some third-party licensing issues. It includes a lot of specific stuff about LGPL. It also includes some questions about the different contexts that a dependency may be used in, different sort of linking contexts that might affect the licensing differently for LGPL. It also includes questions about when we need to look at transitive dependencies versus just the top-level third-party dependency and so forth. Knowing that process will take a while, this is just a reminder for us to ask CC every few months, hey, do you got any answers yet? And be annoying like that. Peter Murray is on community council, and he thought this was a reasonable way of going about this until we get some actual answers. So that's one of those. Let me skip to the third one here. This is, as I mentioned, with the process of updating those three lists of licenses, the idea was that we would do it once per flower release. When we actually do it once per flower release doesn't super duper matter, but just for argument's sake, I figured maybe when something goes GA would be a way to do it. We didn't, the subgroup didn't have a better answer than that, so we've temporarily put that as Trillium GA, like some of the others here. And then the final thing I added here is the idea of some proactive communication. We already approved the Q&A page that has that thing about like, what if I have a dependency with a license that's no good? And those are conversations that we'll have to have at TC if we have to have them. But the subgroup would rather that TC be proactive about communication about this, so that we can try to avoid having those conversations during the module evaluation process, so that we can, have them as early as possible. Just like we did up here, where we have this message that we post to various channels saying if you're developing a module that has some architectural changes, and please reach out to the TC and let's have a conversation about that before it actually gets to the module evaluation period, because then it would be too late to do an RFC in a reasonable time frame, et cetera. So I did a first draft here of a very similar communication, which I didn't share this yet, other than with the subgroup, but I'll just give people a minute to read that through for the same sort of goal. So thanks, Salamine, for the thumbs up. The idea here, as I explained, is we'd figure out some cycle during the flower release to send this out, trying to get ahead of the problem instead of dealing with it during evaluation. So any questions or comments on any of these three things that we're suggesting adding to the calendar, or that communication plan? Thanks, Jen. Shelley.
It's actually not, it's a question not about those three things. I was wondering, do we know how frequent or often third-party libraries change their licenses? I'm just starting to think of a scenario where at one point in this evaluation process, a third-party library was okay. It had an okay license, but then it no longer does.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my quick answer to that would just be I don't have any numbers on it, but we know that it does happen occasionally. We know one of the libraries that that Alameda mentioned in the show and tell changed its license recently. We know even with like Elasticsearch and OpenSearch that had license changes. But and beyond the modules themselves changing their licenses, our dependencies can change to include nested dependencies, which could also have different licenses. So that's a good question. Kevin.
Okay, I wanted to mention that we actually have the opposite happening where with Hibernate, we have something that we didn't allow that now changed the license to be allowed. So it goes both ways.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's also under Shelley's, like the concept of changing licenses can go in good or bad direction. Alameda, you had the hand next.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that usually the license doesn't change for a specific version. So if a dependency was version one and it was Apache 2, that would still be fine. It's when upgrading to version two, version three, where the license potentially has changed, it would be a problem. But the specific version that the module was using would most likely be fine, but looking ahead, then yeah, things may have to change. Overall, I don't think the license changes happen too often. That's frowned upon in the open source community. Thank you.
Yeah, and the idea of, ideally scanning these things once a release period, you never know what we'll find, what we find. Zach?
I was going to sort of echo what Alamine did say, which is that we have seen license changes. React went through this like 6 or 7 years ago as well. I think it tends to be rare, and it tends to be big news, at least with some of the bigger packages like React, like open source or OpenSearch rather. It's certainly something to be aware of, and I think periodic scanning would help us catch those things. But to specifically answer the question of do we know how often this happens, I think the answer is it's pretty rare, but that's anecdotal data, not carefully analyzed systemic data.
Yeah, I would have, oh, Julian, go ahead.
Yeah, I think third-party dependency might switch some dependency, and then it might be more likely that it has a different license. So it can happen. But one thing that I think we should improve is that we don't simply say, "Oh, each development team should check their own code." I think we as a project should do a complete scan of all components before the official release, so that we can be sure that everything has been checked at least once before the release. And if yeah, that the flower release check should be done centrally so that it's complete and covers all official modules.
Yeah, so first of all, I agree, Julian, with your point about dependencies, changing their own implementations and adding additional dependencies, which could have new licenses and so forth. To your point, so about scanning the whole project. So the subgroup went back and forth on this a couple of times about recommending that as well. And we didn't recommend it. That it be done immediately for a couple of reasons. The first is that one of the questions that we went back and forth on was the issue of third parties' nested dependencies and in what context they needed to be checked and what context they didn't. And we need that again is one of the questions that we have asked for the legal advice. We have, for the short term, enabled those nested dependency license checks in all of these in all of our modules. I believe from some initial testing that folks have done, including yourself, that if we were to scan every UI and backend module with that nested dependency thing turned on, we would probably find problems in a lot of different modules. And those problems might be legitimate, and they also might be illegitimate because it could be that the nested scanning is not appropriate in that context, or the way that that dependency is used in the project might obviate the issue. And so we were wary of doing a full scan that would raise issues that potentially could be false positive issues until we actually had legal saying, yeah, that's real. And so that's why we didn't make that recommendation immediately. I can see arguments certainly on the other side as well, if folks want to talk that through. But that's context to why we didn't actually make that recommendation. Other comments on that or anything else? Wayne?
I would be curious to hear from maybe, I don't know if we really have representatives of the development community here. I mean, we have Zach, of course, and Julian and Alameda. What is the likelihood that a development team is going to actually do this scan periodically, if it's not a part of their sort of, definition of done for a release or a feature or something like that? I mean, it just feels like the communication, while it might be nice, is going to lead to pretty weak enforcement. And so then the responsibility is going to rest on the project, to do this periodically, I would think. But I'm not, I'm not sure what developers might think about that.
So I'll jump in. From the automated point of view, I don't see any reason not to just, run Alameda's tool on, on each PR merge, for example, in the UI, or each time we change package.json, or each time we change yarn.lock if we're looking at the third-party stuff. As far as the larger, there's 32 criteria or something, and we're only looking at two or three of them in that tool right now. We're certain. I think it would be too big an ask to review every single one of these on every single PR. And it would be a waste of effort for the most part, since a lot of the stuff that would be evaluated there doesn't really apply in the context of an individual PR. But specifically for things like licensing and third-party tooling, that part I think is relatively easy to automate, as we saw, and relatively to easy to see when it applies, right? It applies when you're changing a package.json or a yarn lock or maybe a POM XML, whatever the equivalent on the backend side is. And so maybe there are straightforward places that we could integrate that with existing tooling and leverage the great work that's been done here with very little effort, or very little manual effort on the part of teams. Because, if you are working on a feature and you don't change package.json, great, chug along. If you are working on a feature and you add a third-party dependency, you change the version of a third-party dependency, it's going to trigger that check. And if there's a problem, it will prevent you from merging your code. I think that would be straightforward to do.
Limited.
Yeah, I like the ideas being thrown around. My hesitation is that up until now, the licenses haven't been enforced. So, for example, what Zach said, if I add a new dependency that is valid, and then the tool runs and finds the historical offenses, then I'm on the hook to fix that. I think, yeah, we need maybe it's action items to say if we find the issues, are we able to fix them? Otherwise, I think it would be noise. And the sense I'm getting right now is that if I go to a team to say, go re-implement this dependency because it's not the right licensing, that there will be much pushback. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, that's you make a really good point, Alabine, and maybe we could. At the same time, I think it would be important to encourage adoption of this and this kind of review as soon as possible. Because if the tool does find stuff that exists in our code, that's probably something that should be a high priority to fix. And so maybe, we can encourage everybody, try to encourage teams to run this once, and if it runs cleanly, then turn it on. And if it doesn't run cleanly, maybe we can turn it on in some way that comments on a PR but doesn't block it when it fails. And so that way existing work could continue. And once we finally scheduled and completed the work to repair those problems, then we could flip the switch from I'm going to comment on your PR to I'm going to block your PR, because at that point we would know that it was really a change that was causing the problem rather than a latent thing. So that might be a way to introduce this more gently, right? As a comment at first and then as a block later once the comments run cleanly.
I agree.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I should also suggest with the message that we post right now to the various channels about RFCs, we also got the release management stakeholders group to include a link to that in the schedules ever since, I don't know, two or three releases ago. It's a line item in the release schedule. I forget where it's tied exactly, but to do that check. And I think as an action item, we should also reach out to the release stakeholders group to do the same about this, to ask them, well, to point to this message and to do that way it would sort of be part of the normal release process for the teams to run it at the very least once a cycle, if not beyond that. Other comments, questions about any of this? All right, I think we got what we were trying to get today. I didn't add the 6 months from now thing to the recurring calendar, just because I assume that since the normal Monday meeting process is we look through anything new submitted to the, any outstanding pull requests, we should bump into it naturally. Or and we can think about it at that point. So yeah, unless anyone else has any other comments and questions, I think we did what we need to do here. And then the subgroup, we can just have a meeting tomorrow to address the action items that came out of this.
All
Sounds
righty.
good.
Thank you, Maccabee. With that, the dedicated discussion will come to a close. Any final thoughts before we head out? Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.